Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
I am the greatest. He talks a great deal and brags indeed of a muscular punch that's incredibly speedy. The fistic world was dull and weary. With a champ like Liston, things had to be dreary. Then someone with color, someone with dash, brought fight fans a running with cash.
Show me the money.
This brash young boxer is something to see, and the heavyweight championship is his destiny. This kid fights great. He's got speed and endurance. But if you sign to fight him, increase your insurance. I am the greatest.
Muhammad Ali died last year at the age of 74. In this special edition of the Sunny Side of Sports, we focus on his memorable life and gain insights from his longtime trainer, Angelo Dundee, who died February 1st, 2012, at age 90. Our opening bell rings now with this Ali profile by VOA's Ted Landfair.
I am the greatest!
The signature boast of the son of a Kentucky sign painter who took up boxing after neighborhood bullies stole his bicycle. Born Cassius Marcellus Clay, Jr., he was soon known as the Louisville Lip for his taunts and homespun poems in an amateur fighting career topped by a light heavyweight gold medal at the 1960 Summer Olympics in Rome. Clay shocked the boxing world by winning his first 19 professional fights and knocking out Sonny Liston for the World Heavyweight Championship in 1964. "You're an old, ugly bear," Clay said to Liston's face. To describe himself, he offered a verse.
This brash young boxer is something to see, and the heavyweight championship is his destiny. This kid fights great. He's got speed and endurance. But if you sign to fight him, increase your insurance.
A year before the Liston fight, Cassius Clay had joined the Nation of Islam, known as the Black Muslims, and afterward he announced he had changed his name to Muhammad Ali. "I had been a Negro. I had no confidence," was all he would say on the subject, but he brimmed with self-assurance now. Using a duck-and-weave style that he called his float-like-a-butterfly, sting-like-a-bee technique, he was graceful yet ferocious in the ring. Outside it, he kept crowds and reporters laughing. Before his 1975 title fight with Joe Frazier in the Philippines, Ali pulled a toy gorilla out of his pocket.
"It will be a killer and a thriller and a killer when I get the gorilla in Manila."
1974, a year before the thriller in Manila bout, fans in Zaire had followed his every move surrounding what came to be called the Rumble in the Jungle with George Foreman.
"Even today I meet people and they bring up the Ali fight and they still think the fight is going on. They need to be on my side or Ali. It doesn't exist anymore, but you learn great lessons from those defeats. You learn that it's just a day in your life. It shouldn't be taken over. It shouldn't consume you. And it's just a moment, and enjoy every moment."
"Boumaye," the crowd shouted. "Kill him, Ali." Brutal words for perhaps the world's most famous pacifist, who in 1967 refused U.S. military service despite the threat of 5 years in prison and a hefty fine. He said at the time,
"My conscience won't let me go shoot my brother or some darker people or some poor hungry people in the mud for big, powerful America, and shoot them for what? They never called me a nigger."
On college campuses nationwide, Ali spoke out against the Vietnam War while his case was appealed, and ultimately, the U.S. Supreme Court reversed his draft evasion conviction. Muhammad Ali won 56 of 61 professional fights in his last two bouts in 1980 and 1981. He was already showing the debilitating effects of Parkinson's disease, the brain disorder that affects muscle control. In one of his last television interviews in 1985,
I don't know why I'm the most known American on earth.
The shuffle and slurred speech brought on by the baffling disease were evident. John Walter, an adjunct professor of ethnic studies at the University of Washington, calls Ali the quintessential American, generous and caring, provocative, courageous physically and in his convictions, and boastful, but backing up his crowing with incredible deeds. Professor Walter says Ali's influence has reached the world's humblest hamlets.
Down in Australia among the Aborigines, these people saw him. They took an example from how he conducted his life, that he's willing to stand up for their rights, so to speak, and to excel at the same time. You will find many, many examples of people who say, I owe what I'm doing to this man. That, to me, is profound.
Other words of admiration tumbled upon each other at the dedication of the $80 million Muhammad Ali Center in Ali's hometown of Louisville. Former President Bill Clinton said Ali, who in 1990 negotiated the release of 15 U.S. hostages in direct negotiations with Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein, was a force for peace.
You proved once again that the power of example matters a lot more than the example of power.
Just be a beautiful fight. Ooh, I'll be dancing. I'll be so pretty. Ooh.
Muhammad Ali once said of himself, he talks a lot and boasts indeed of a power punch and blinding speed. And he asked, how could anyone not see American in the following? I am the greatest. I'm Ted Lanfair.
Thanks, Ted. The great fighter was honored in 2005 when the Muhammad Ali Center opened in his birthplace of Louisville, Kentucky. Reporter Rick Howlett in Louisville tells us more about the center.
It was boxing that made Muhammad Ali, born Cassius Clay, one of the world's most recognized figures. There's plenty of boxing memorabilia in the Ali Center, but everyone associated with it is quick to say that it's not a shrine to the sport or to the man. In addition to the exhibits celebrating Muhammad Ali's boxing career and the various significant events in his life, there are six pavilions. Center President Michael Fox explains that each represents what Ali calls his core values: respect, confidence, conviction, dedication, giving, and spirituality.
That's the foundation of this institution. There is not another institution on the face of this earth that has that as its underpinning. That is what all of our programming hereafter will evolve from, these six values.
The opening of the Muhammad Ali Center was marked with a series of events, including a celebrity gala and fundraiser attended by notables from the worlds of sports, entertainment, and politics.
The world is a better place because of you.
Former U.S. President Bill Clinton was among those who recognized Ali's achievements.
You thrilled us as a fighter, and you inspire us even more as a force for peace and reconciliation, understanding and respect. And now you've got this center which will enshrine both your thrills and your inspiration and inspire others to follow your lead.
Visitors to the Muhammad Ali Center will see and hear details related to two major events in Ali's life that at the time drew scorn from much of the American public. One was his conversion to Islam in 1964, which prompted his name change. The other came 2 years later when he refused, on religious grounds, to be drafted into military service for the Vietnam War. As the legal battle that resulted from his draft resistance made its way through the courts, Ali would be barred from boxing professionally for 3 years until the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in his favor. Longtime boxing promoter Bob Arum points out that Ali's refusal to join the service predated the American anti-war movement.
People don't remember that the war in Vietnam was not an unpopular war when it started. it became horribly unpopular. He was considered to be a traitor to his country. And he had the courage to stand up to everybody, friends and foe, and to say that what he was doing was the right thing.
It was that event that raised Ali's profile from a pugilist to a peace advocate, according to his friend, musician James Taylor.
He really woke us up. You know, we helped America wake up by associating with his process, really. We came to know so much more about ourselves and about injustice, about just because of the magnetism of his personality and his persona. He captured us all, and we felt what he felt. You know, he was an amazing communicator of his personal experience to so many people. He's an astounding character in our cultural history and on the world stage.
And took away that slave name of Cassius Clay. Now I can go all over the world.
As one of the most colorful sports figures in the 1960s and 70s, Muhammad Ali inspired young people around the world. That part of his legacy is showcased in a large mosaic wall made up of 5,000 small wood tiles. Children from 144 nations created the images, reflecting their hopes and dreams. In addition to the many exhibits in the center's 8,600 square meter interior, there are classrooms for community outreach programs. These include a conflict resolution curriculum for children, created with the help of the United Nations, and a variety of self-improvement courses for all ages. The Ali Center's president, Michael Fox, says that like the great athlete it honors, the new facility puts great emphasis on the power of personal development.
We encourage and will work with our visitor public and our participants in our programming to have them think much more about their personal values, much more about their personal development. We often say the Muhammad Ali Center is about Ali, and it's about me, all of us, individually.
I'm Rick Howlett in Louisville, Kentucky.
Thanks, Rick.
Music time in Africa. Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in. Feast your ears and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Friday at 0900 and Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 15, 20, and 2200 hours UTC.
And you're listening to a special edition of the Sunny Side of Sports on the life and legacy of former world heavyweight boxing champion Muhammad Ali. The late Hall of Fame trainer Angelo Dundee was in the corner for Ali's greatest fights. Angelo was also a good friend of the Sunny Side of Sports, delighting our Voice of America listeners for more than a decade with his colorful and often funny commentary about Ali in particular and pro boxing in general. One of Ali's greatest victories took place on October 30th, 1974, in Kinshasa, the capital of the Democratic Republic of Congo, then known as Zaire. His eighth-round knockout of then-heavyweight champion George Foreman became known as the Rumble in the Jungle. Let's listen in now to a phone call I made to Angelo Dundee in Florida to ask him about the epic heavyweight contest.
Hello.
Hey, Angelo.
Yeah.
This is Sonny Young from Voice of America.
Yeah.
How you doing?
All right.
Angelo, reflect a little bit. What are your main memories of that fight in the former Zaire?
Well, you know, it was such an event. You know, you get there and we're the good guys. You know, right there, Ali Boumaye. And he was like a hero there. And the Zaire people are so goddamn nice. It's a shame. You know, the country's having their problems. And everybody I met there was so congenial and nice. And the fun part of it was a guy named Chimpupu Chimpupu Wa Chimpupa. He was the PR guy.
Okay.
And he'd make us go. See, we were outside of Kinshasa. We were like 45 minutes away in the government complex called Nasseli. That's where they entertained all the African nations. And we all had villas facing the Congo River. And God forbid we said Congo River. It was going to get called the Zaire River. And we used to look forward to going to the gym every day. In fact, on my off duties, I used to train lizards. It made a good hit with the newspaper guys. When they came, it was a rainy day. We didn't go to the gym. And these lizards, these big lizards, we walking across like the banisters.
Right.
And I said, wait a minute, let me tell you what I did. And I said, see that lizard? I trained that sucker. Now watch, he's going to go five steps and do push-ups. No matter where you go, you got to have a sense of humor.
Angelo, did Foreman train close to Muhammad, or were
He trained right across the way from us, and we used to spy on him. I used to borrow Howard Bingham's telescopic lens and watch him from behind the hiding spots. We're like little kids, you know, because you don't see nothing in the gym. There's nothing to check, you know. But we had fun, so. This is the whole key, you know. People don't realize to excel at what you do, you got to have fun with it. And we always had fun with Muhammad every day. Every day, 19 years, I had fun, you know. So what the hell? This is what it's all about.
Angelo, was the weather a factor in that fight, the heat in the former Zaire?
Well, you got to remember, we trained in Florida, Miami. Muhammad loves the heat. In fact, to this day, Muhammad calls me, he threatens me, he's going to come down and sweat. I says, please do.
Do you think the heat bothered Big George more than it did Muhammad?
Well, no. I just think it was meant to be, you know, this is what happens in boxing. Isn't that a horrible career to have, you know, if somebody out there can lick you? Isn't that tough? I mean, you're a great fighter, and there's somebody out there might do a number on you. The only guy that didn't taste that was Rocky Marciano, God bless him, because he retired undefeated. And another kid from Thailand retired undefeated.
Angelo, looking back on the Rumble in the Jungle, would that fight have happened without the electric-haired man Don King?
No, he was in the right place at the right time. Had the connections, the complexions to give us the right direction. That's what Muhammad used to say about me. Angelo got the connections and the directions to give you the right direction. That's right. So we applied it the other way. No, it was meant to be. Don King's a hell of a promoter. He went there and they wanted to name their country a new name, you know, get rid of that Belgian Congo thing, and then name their country Zaire. And Mobutu's a very, very, you know, that Zaire's a big country. And I think it's bigger than the United States. Yeah, big. And this guy ran it. He was a remarkable guy. He used to go all his provinces by helicopter. He was a hell of a man.
Angelo, where does the Rumble in the Jungle rate in the Muhammad Ali legacy?
Well, it's got to be one of the greatest happenings, the changing of a name, government. Well, Muhammad, you know, was a happening any place we ever went. You know, I get letters 10 a week maybe, you know, letting us want pictures and stuff like that. It's remarkable, you know, because here I was with a guy who was a living legend. And in his career now, I'm his fistic voice because the guy can't talk. And I know it breaks his heart. He loved to talk. He loved it because he loved talking to the media. He enjoyed that. And I pride myself with that. I pushed him towards that because if you want to be a superstar, these guys will make you a superstar. And, you know, that's why he was so great with the media. He was the first superstar that did that. Never happened before.
That's Hall of Fame boxing trainer Angelo Dundee, who died on February 1st, 2012. The Rumble in the Jungle was also remembered in song. American singer Don Covey released this tune in 1975, titled, appropriately enough, Rumble in the Jungle.
Ladies and gentlemen, in this corner, the challenger, wearing burgundy and white trunks from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the former heavyweight champion, Muhammad Ali. In the opposite corner, wearing red trunks with white stripes, the heavyweight champion of the world,
motherland, yeah. Ali and Foreman, yeah. Had a showdown to see who would wear, oh yeah, the heavyweight crown, yeah. Heavy is cool, filled with hope, till he chased Ali.
That's American singer Don Covey with his song Rumble in the Jungle about the 1974 heavyweight fight between Muhammad Ali and George Foreman in Kinshasa. Who are the top three heavyweights of all time? That's the question I posed to Angelo Dundee.
Top three? Let me see. First one, Muhammad. Second, Muhammad. The third one, Muhammad. Top three. With the other one, seriously, you got to give, you know, Marciano belongs in there because retired undefeated heavyweight champion of the world. He was for real. You know, you got to put Joe Louis there. Top three is tough. It'll be very crowded. Dempsey'd have to be there. And all their eras, they were great champions, those guys. And you got to respect them all. But the guy that gave you so much, you knew when the kid fought, you got a big charge. Muhammad created a scene, no matter who he fought. And a lot of those guys he fought never would have been known unless Muhammad fought them. The Joe Frazers, know what I mean? The Liston had to be there. And see, right away, the top three is going to be a very crowded situation.
In terms of Muhammad's fights, Angelo, would you put the Rumble in the Jungle in the form of
that?
The Rumble in the Jungle, would that be one of Muhammad's top three fights?
The Thrill in Manila, God. The Rumble in the Jungle. Well, the Rumble in the Jungle because the dramatics for a country trying to get a new name. You know what I mean? That comes into play. And what the heck? Look at the greatness of a George Foreman. He'd come out after 10 years, and he'd come out, and the man got to be heavyweight champion. I think it's remarkable. George Foreman is one of the remarkable guys in that division. So you need more than three slots to bring around great champions because George was great.
You mentioned Joe Frazier, Angelo. If Joe Frazier wasn't around, do you think the legacy of Muhammad Ali would be what it is today?
Well, you see, guys blend with each other. The perfect blend was Frazier. Because whenever you threw those two guys into a situation, it had to be excitement.
That's the late Hall of Fame trainer Angelo Dundee talking about the rivalry between Muhammad Ali and Smokin' Joe Frazier. I'm VOA Sonny Young, and that wraps up a special edition of The Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
At 1600 hours universal time on Tuesday, October 3, 2017, the United States will begin accepting applications for the 2019 Diversity Visa Program. Applications will be accepted until 1600 hours Universal Time on Tuesday, November 7, 2017. Through this program, the United States government makes available 50,000 permanent resident visas to citizens of countries that traditionally have a low rate of immigration to the United States. The United States is a nation of immigrants. Throughout our history, immigrants from every corner of the world have contributed to life in the United States. Without this diversity, we would not be the nation that we are today. Historically, though, not all nations and ethnic groups are well represented in our country. The Diversity Visa Program specifically permits entries from countries with a historically lower level of immigration to the United States. This year, citizens from the following countries are not eligible to participate in the program based on their historically higher level of immigration to the United States: Bangladesh, Brazil, Canada, mainland China, Colombia, Dominican Republic, El Salvador, Haiti, India, Jamaica, Mexico, Nigeria, Pakistan, Peru, Philippines, South Korea, United Kingdom, except for Northern Ireland, and its dependent territories, and Vietnam. Entries for the Diversity Visa Program are accepted online only, no exceptions. Those who are interested in entering the DV program should go to dvlottery.state.gov and read the instructions, beginning with the qualification requirements. The entry process takes about 15 minutes to complete. All winners are chosen by a random drawing. It is very important that entrants save their unique confirmation number. In May of next year, you can begin checking the status of your entry on the website, but you can only check using your confirmation number. Successful entrants are not notified by email of the status of their EDV online entry. Any email claiming to notify entrants they have been selected for the DV program is not legitimate. Entrants can only access their information on their application through the online entrant status check at dvlottery.state.gov. The law allows only one entry per person during the registration period. Entrants who submit more than one entry will be disqualified. Those selected in the DV program may apply for immigrant visas. Entry into the DV program is free, so please keep in mind that anyone asking for money to better your chances of winning is running a scam. Good luck.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
What's up, Africa? It's Jackson Vunganyi.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Cape Town.
Can I be upfront with you? That's exactly what Nadia and I plan to do every Wednesday at 1730 UTC. Upfront looks at issues that affect you.
Since the world is moving at a faster rate, there's need to have an intelligent computer.
Interesting news.
Canadian man was sentenced for drunk driving after being pulled over in his mother's motorized wheelchair. 35-year-old man was fined and placed on probation.
And of course, music. No clouds in my stones. Entertainment, celebrities, you name it, we'll talk about it.
And of course, we love to hear from you. Send us your thoughts and comments. Our email address is upfront@voanews.com.
So don't forget to check us out every Wednesday at 1730 UTC on The Voice of America.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Malaria is transmitted by mosquito bites, but there are some things you can do to reduce your risk. Wear light-colored, loose-fitting clothing, including long pants and long sleeves, especially when it is dark and mosquitoes are most active. Eliminate any standing water around your home, including water that collects in wood piles, taps, puddles, old buckets, water jugs, and containers that livestock drink from. And if you can get one, use an insecticide-treated bed net to cover you and your children while you sleep.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.